accession number 18262, reel 3.
Frank Carter, reel 3. Was this the first Chinese soldier you'd captured?
Yes, that was the nearest I'd been to a Chinaman, actually. And we sent him back down the rear, and he wandered off down to the bottom of the mountain on his own, actually. No guard, nothing. He just wandered off down to the bottom where the rest of them were. I think we captured about 13 or 14 all total off of that hill. And the rest was blown up in the trenches in there where they wouldn't come out. And they had what they call... they used to call it the Winkle Pick'em section. They'd go along to a trench and call down it. The Chinese had they dig these trenches very deep and tunnel in under like we do, but they used to go further than we did. They tunnel in under and you go and shout to them to come out. Now, I don't suppose whether they could understand that. Some were frightened and they never came out. So they, what were they'd do and ask them to come out. If they didn't come out, the policy was usually they'd throw a hand grenade down into the hole. And then when, if nothing happened then, they'd stick a flamethrower down there. And if a flamethrower went down there, you'd take all the air out of the hole and whoever was there would suffocate. We moved further on round to the top of this plateau and we took up positions at the rear of this large plateau overlooking the rest of the valleys for the valley further on up. The Chinese had left so fast, they left a lot of guns and they had these very small, I think it's 2.5 bazookas that the Americans used to have, which were useless when it came to fighting against the Russian-built tanks that we had that were attacking. The T-34s and that was the Russian-built tanks. And the North Koreans had a lot of those. But the Americans, Smith's group that came over were the first to leave Japan and come across to Korea, thought they were going to stop these North Korean tanks with these 2.5 bazookas, and they found that the bazooka shell was just bouncing off the side of the tank and doing no destruction at all. So when we came out to Korea, they were bringing out the 3.5 bazooka, which was a large thing, which was a very, very good thing for tanks or anything like that, blowing out pillboxes. If the Chinese dug in and you could fire one of these 3.5 bazookas and there'd be nothing left of this, of the slit trench or a pillbox. Anyway, they left behind a lot of these 2.5 bazookas and I suppose they thought we'd have a go at firing them and using them, you know, because some of the chaps used to use the little burp guns that they caught hold of and that. But these bazookas, they'd spiked, and if you didn't look up the barrel of the bazooka, you could never tell they were spiked. All they'd done was knocked a dent in the barrel. So if you fired them with a bomb in, the bomb would explode in the barrel and kill you if you didn't notice it. Anyhow, we didn't use them, but we stuck up a couple of the machine guns they'd left there and in case we got attacked during the night. We didn't get attacked that night. But everyone was dead beat asleep. We were on 50% stand to. One slept while one kept guard, kept watch. Night was uneventful, I suppose, the night was. And except for a few scares where people fired off in the dark and fired because they thought they heard something. And if you stare at a bush in the darkness, you'll swear blind it'll move. It's moving if you stare into... We had no night vision binoculars or things like that, like they had in the Vietnam War. It was all eyesight there, that's all. You couldn't... when it got dark, you couldn't see any further. I've got to cover my hand on it. You couldn't see any further than you could see, literally. But the Americans had a thing whereby they called it artificial moonlight, whereby if you had low clouds, they'd shine a searchlight up onto the clouds and reflect it back down to your area where you were, and it give you some sort of vision. The next day, the night was uneventful. The next day, they decided to send a patrol out forward. I was stuck on this patrol. I was volunteered for it because I had the Bren gun, and I was the youngest in the section, more or less. Anyhow, and we moved off. My number two following up on the left hand side of me, with the ammunition belts and covering me with his rifle. We moved on this 8-man patrol. We went forward. We had to go forward to find out how far the Chinese had retreated back. We had to find their forward position. We went along in this snow, and the snow that we were walking through in the valleys was easily 3 and 4 foot deep. We were just literally walking along with snow up to your waist. We went about a mile and a half, I suppose, and all of a sudden out of the hillside came machine gun firing at us. That is as far as we had to go. We had to find out where they were. The machine gun fired at us, and we withdrew back and returned to our area and report on where the hill that we'd been fired on from. So nothing else happened then. We were sort of there for a couple of days, and then we moved back up to the Imjin River. And this was the line that was being set up to stop the Chinese coming back across so that they could attack Seoul, which was only, according to them, Seoul was only about half hour away on a good road. The Chinese, they set up a defensive line all along the Imjin River. We were about 1,000 yards from the river, I suppose, and our positions were set up all along there. It was a beautiful springtime was coming then in Korea, and Korea in spring is a beautiful place. It really is a beautiful place. All the plants were growing, and after the hard winter, the green was coming through, and the birds would be beginning to move. The white cranes and that, we'd see them flying off down the valley over our head. And there's some beautiful sights there. We're on the top of this hill, high hill, overlooking the small village, Solomarie, the small village was. And in the morning, you'd wake up and the clouds were that low, they were lower than you were on the hill, actually. You were looking down on top of the clouds. And the clouds were covering this little village, Solomarie, at the bottom. And you could hear the voices of the people in the village ever so clear up on top of the mountain. It was so clear, you could hear their voices. And you could see when they lit the fires up in their houses, because the stream of smoke had come straight up through the clouds in a long stream. And it was beautiful. And the white cranes were flying down above the clouds, down the valley and that. And it was a beautiful sight. And it was a lovely, cold, warm day. You know, it was a cold, but the sun was on you. It was warm above the clouds. And I'll never forget that. It's the countryside. After a couple of days, couple of 3 days, I suppose, they decided to send an armoured patrol across the river, across the Imjin River, with tanks and Bren gun carriers and Oxford carriers, across the river to go far as far forward as we could to find out where the Chinese were. Anyhow, we went across on this day with at that time we had tanks. I can't remember the name of the tank.
Centurions.
Yes, we had Centurion tanks. That's right. The first time we'd ever seen them. I think it was the 8th Hussars. They joined us and went across the river. We went across the river with the Bren Gunn carriers and the Oxford carriers. And we went about 14 miles from the other side of the Imjin River, and we couldn't find anyone. We couldn't find any signs of troops or anything. And I suppose when we returned to the brains to be, I suppose, our intelligence thought that we weren't likely to get attacked for some time. But unbeknown to us, if we went on another mile, we'd have found the Chinese troops. We did capture one. I never forget this young lad, young Chinese boy. He couldn't have been older than 18, I suppose. He came walking out of the bushes halfway there. No, we were coming back. That's right. We were coming back on the back of the tanks, and he came walking out of the bushes. Put his hands up, and they stuck him on the tank with me. I was on the back of the tank with me. Only a young lad. I gave him a cigarette. He was nervous as hell. And on the tank, we had Chu, our Korean interpreter, was on the tank as well, riding back. And I asked the interpreter how old he was. And he asked him in Chinese. The lad said he was 18. And he said, well, you know, what are you doing here? Where are the rest of them? Oh, he said, the rest of them's a few miles back. He said he gave himself up because he didn't agree with China coming to Korea to fight. He didn't want to fight. And he said that on his first chance he was going to get, he was going to leave them and give himself up. And he said why he came with them. He said because he was a member of this small army group in his village and in China, and they were asked, every one of this army group were asked to volunteer for Korea. And he said he had to volunteer, otherwise he would have lost face with the rest of them. And so he came, and that's how he ended up in Korea. They were so-called volunteers, but they were regular soldiers. They called them Chinese people's volunteers, but they were regular soldiers. We came back off of that and went back to our position, overlooking the Imjin River. And I suppose it must have been about a week later. There was a North American Harvard plane flying over a hill the other side of the Imjin River. And we looked across. It was a lovely warm day. We were all sat out on the top of the hill watching this Harvard dive onto this hill and machine gun the top of it round. And anyhow, we didn't think any more of it after that. About a week later after that, up comes the company commander with a load of photographs. And he gave them to our company commander. And the company commander gave them to our platoon officer, Norris, Lieutenant Norris. And Norris had us all together, got us all together and said, I want some volunteers, he said. He said, to go across the river, he said, can you remember that plane that was shooting that hill up? He said, yeah. We said, yeah. Well, he said, he was taking photographs of that hill. And they've seen people in that communication trench there. He said, we've got to go across at night and capture a prisoner. We all thought about this here. No, not interested, you know. No one was interested in this sort of thing, especially a night patrol. Anyhow, he said, if no one volunteers, I'm going to have to take about nine of you. See? Oh, anyhow. No one volunteered, and especially these reservists, none of them had volunteered because they'd been in the last war anyhow. Anyhow, I was picked again. I was volunteered again. My number two came with me. There was a Corporal Robinson, Lieutenant Norris, and Sergeant Ted Short. Poor old Ted, a nice chap. We were sent on this patrol, and there were nine of us, and we were working. The first night, we were going to be taken by boats across the Imjin River, and we had to walk to this hill in a diamond formation then, with me covering the rear as I had the Bren gun. We went to cross the river that night, and down on the riverbank was these canvas boats. The Royal Engineers brought them down, these canvas boats, and they, unbeknown to us, these canvas boats folded up and they went flat. And they'd been folded up so long that when the engineers lifted them up, where they'd been all along the folds in places, they'd rotted. And the crease, where the crease was, there was a little hole. By the time we got halfway across the river, the boats were filling up with water a bit smart. So we had to turn round and everyone had to make a dash back to the bank we came back off of. Oh dear. Anyway, that was a bit of a disaster that night, so the patrol was called off. The following night, the engineers came up with these aluminium boats that they'd use for pontoons, making pontoons across the rivers. And they took us across. We got across the river, and in front of us were some engineers. They cleared a track and marked it with white tape. They said, you follow that white tape, and if there's any mines, it'll be outside of it. You follow the white tape for 100 yards, and then they said, you're on your own. We thought, no, this is as far as they've gone, 100 yards. We followed the white tape, nine of us. All keeping in a narrow file then. We couldn't widen it. It was just a width, about a metre wide, I suppose. We followed this white tape to the 100 yards, and then we were on our own. We spread out into a diamond formation with myself and my number two cut following the rear. We got to the bottom of this hill that we were going to climb. And round the bottom of it was a big cart track that came round the base of the hill and went to the village on the left-hand side. This cart track. And we crossed this cart track and started to climb the hill. At the time, the Americans had this artificial moonlight up. And you could see where you were going, literally. And it also lit up this cart track at the bottom of the hill. We are halfway up the side of the hill. As I was covering the rear, I had to look round in the back of to the rear. Down on the track below us, in this artificial moonlight, I could see two figures. They were stood on the track with rifles on their shoulder, watching us climb up this hill. I hit the foot of the chap in front of me. I said, pass it on, we're being watched. So it was passed up to the front, Corporal Robson. Back came the message, keep moving, perhaps they haven't seen us. But they were literally standing there pointing us out to one another on the side of this hill. And then they just walked off, these two chaps walked off round the corner towards the village. Took no notice. There they had said they haven't seen us. You know, this artificial moonlight gives you some sort of movement. You could see where you were going, literally. We got about 6 foot from this communication trench, I suppose. And the artificial moonlight went out. They turned the searchlight off. You can imagine coming into a lighted room and then going into the darkness. Walk out into the darkness, you can't see. You're blinded for a little while. We were still moving, and I heard the front end of the diamond formation fall into this slit trench. You never heard so much noise in your life. They literally fell in, and everyone fell in on top of them into this long slit trench. Of course, everyone was swearing and trying to keep quiet. Fell into, lucky for us, there was no one in the slit trench. But they must have heard us coming, and they must have been notified by these two chaps that walked round into the village. Anyhow, they decided to split the patrol up. The communication trench took the whole circumference of the top of the hill. So they decided to split the patrol up. One side would follow the trench round that way, someone would go that way and see if we could get prisoners. Anyway, it was pitch black. You couldn't see hardly in hand in front of your face. You had to go very, very slowly and very quietly. Try to be quiet. Anyhow, we split up. I went the right-hand side with a couple of three of the other lads, and the others went the other way. But all the time you were walking around that trench, you had a funny feeling that you weren't alone. You couldn't see anything, pitch black. You weren't alone. You had an edgy feeling. I don't know how to explain it, but I had a feeling, you could feel it on the back of your neck, that someone was watching you. And you couldn't see anything. It was pitch black. We eventually went round the other side and met up with the other ones. They said, well, we ain't got no one. I said, no. I said, the one aloud, I said, I had a feeling something's there. I said, I had a feeling, you know, one of them feelings you get that someone's watching you. Anyhow, there was a trench that came off the communication trench and followed the ridge of the next hill, which went on down there. And we said, nothing there, so perhaps they've all pulled out, you know. So anyhow, the officer said, wow, we've got to catch a prisoner, he said. We're come over to get a prisoner, he said, and we're going to go down into that village and get one. We're going to get one of them two chaps that was down there and take them over, see. Of course, these reservist chaps, they didn't like it at all. They weren't excited about that at all, and I don't think any of us was. We're walking down towards the village, halfway down the side of the hill. We got about 20 yards from the top. And all hell broke out from behind us. The trench we'd just come from. There was red tracers coming down the hill at us. And if you realise it, in between every one of them tracers is about 8 bullets without, which you can't see. And they were coming down the hill at us. And we were also taking rifle fire and machine gun fire from the village as well. We were caught in the middle between the two. All of a sudden, our officer gave a shout and fell over. We thought he was dead. We're all stood round him, lying round him, trying to protect ourselves. Machine gun fire was still coming at us, coming from both directions there. The officer had a bullet through his jaw. It went inside of his face and out the other. And he was out cold. And Ted Short, he was an old soldier, an old reservist brought back, a very nice chap. Come from Wolverhampton, ever so nice fella. We all looked down at this officer. Well, what are you going to do then, Ted? Well, he said, I don't think we're going to get a prisoner. There's too many down there and there's too many up there. They know we're here. What's the point in trying to get ourselves killed and going to get another prisoner? He said, we're going to pick up this officer in the ground sheet. He said, we're going to get the bloody hell out of here. And that was the words he said. And we picked the officer up, slung him in a ground sheet, and four of the chaps carried him, one on each corner of the ground sheet, and ran. We ran back towards where the engineers were. We had to run down the side, across the side of the hill, back to the track away from the village and away from the communication trench at the top. We ran to the bottom of the hill. I think it was like a herd of elephants, I think we must have been. shots coming at us all the time, and lucky enough, none of us was hit. And we made our way back to where the engineers were. All the time, we were being followed by people sniping at us, and lucky enough, none of us were hit. The only chap was hit was the officer. We got back to the engineers and this piece of white tape, and we made our way down the tape. And we got about halfway along, and someone shouted, and it was the engineers. They'd heard the fire, the battle going on over on the side of the hill. And we're literally, you know, first, when we were attacked, I used a machine gun. I had to fire. All I could fire at was the flashes that came from the communication trench behind us. And all I could see, it was nothing. It was pitch black. All I could see were these flashes, and I raked the top of the hill with a machine gun to keep them down. And the others raked the village below. Of course, it's quietened it a little bit. And then, as I say, we made our way back to where the engineers were. The engineers shouted us to halt. They asked us, they asked for the password. There was a password out that night. I can't remember what it was. It was some. And gave the password, and they came on back. They thought, and when we got to them, they were stood by the boat smoking cigarettes and things like that. They wanted to get back over the river. And they said, we thought you'd had it. He said, all the firing that was going on out there, we thought you'd had it, you know. We said, yeah, well, we got one wounded. And we said, take it, put him in the boat. We're taking it, go back across the river. We all went back across the river. And the couple of the reservists with us, they were really up in arms over it, you know. I'll give you an instance. When we got back across the river, the CO, the company commander at that time, well, is a good chap, good show chap. He said, I heard the firing from over here and that sort of thing, you know. He said, I thought you had a bit of trouble. He said, never mind about tonight with a prisoner. He said, we'll go back tomorrow night. And one of these reservists in the dark said, you bloody ain't getting me, he said. And I don't know whether the CO heard it or not, but or the company commander heard it or not, but nothing was said. And the patrol, we never went across there the following night because they knew we were there. I suppose we were on our positions overlooking the Indian River about, oh, 3 weeks, I suppose, 3-4 weeks. Beautiful, lovely. Everything was nice and quiet. It was beautiful. In the springtime in Korea, as I was saying, is a lovely place. And patrols were going across, listening patrols were going across. No sign of the Chinese anywhere. And they sent the Belgian battalion across the river. They were on a hill just the other side of the Imjin. This side of the Imjin was the Northumberland Fusiliers. They had a hill. And they were spread out along that hill at the right-hand side. We were 1,000 yards further back with our machine guns, Vickers machine guns, water-cooled machine guns, covering the area of the river to our front. And everything was quiet. We settled down there, and everyone was the industry had sent up, different industries in England send you up toothpaste, free toothpaste, and free cigarettes and things like that. You used to get your 50.